Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guests this morning truly exemplify what women empowerment and mompreneurship is all about. After turning in her corporate high heels for a life as a work-at-home mom in 2003, she founded the website The Integrated Mother. Here is where she is the chief mom editor on a mission to help women bridge the gap between motherhood, work, and everything else, so that they can effectively manage their life and their work, resulting in everything, enjoying everything the best life has to offer. As a wife and a mother of three, ages 8, 6, and 3, Michelle Deutsch and I will be discussing her life's journey and her mission with the Integrated Mother, her gift to all moms. Good morning, Michelle. Welcome to From My Mom's Kitchen Talk Radio Show. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Good morning.
Great. Wonderful. Glad to have you on the radio with us this morning. I'd like to start off talking about early years, growing up in a military family, moving extensively, and finally settling down in San Diego.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I was born in Japan. I am a classic Air Force brat. My father met my mother in Japan, and they promptly got married, started a family, and I've actually been living in the United States since I was about three. And, of course, as an Air Force brat, we moved probably about every 2 to 3 years, so my life has always been about a lot of change. I was happy, though, that we finally settled into San Diego, and that's usually what I call my hometown, where people ask me where I'm from. We settled there when I was about 11 or 12. And lived there ever since, until after I got out of college and started my professional life.
I see. During this time, I mean, I know that you were, you know, you moved fairly young to San Diego. Do you still keep in contact with anyone in Japan, or have you visited Japan back and to kind of just have an idea, like, you know, wow, this is where I grew up?
Yeah, sadly, the last time I've been in Japan was in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, my Japanese side of my family still lives there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost embarrassed to say this because I was born in Japan. My mom was born and raised in Japan, and I can probably speak just as much Japanese as maybe you or someone else. Yes, I do have family there. We rarely speak because we don't speak the same language. One of my dreams, though, is to take our family back over there. And my husband and I had intended to go right after we got married, but we immediately started having children, so that kind of put a damper on those plans.
But, you know, a lot of times also it's we go through a cycle, because I know there's a period of time where, you know, for me, leaving Malaysia to come to the United States to go to school and everything else, there was a period of time, okay, I can't wait to get away as far as I can. And then there's a period of time where, you know, let's go back and see things and kind of check things out. And of course, I mean, I speak to my mom, who still lives in Malaysia, and every 2 weeks, and that's about as much Malaysian that I speak in all actuality.
Yeah.
How about you? Do you have a chance to speak Japanese with your mom?
I do. You know, when we were growing up, I asked my mom why she never spoke Japanese to us, because that's the language that she knew.
Right.
That to her, when she came to the United States, she knew very little English.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we weren't taught Japanese in the home.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her about this because most people wonder why I don't speak Japanese. And she told me that when she arrived to the United States, she experienced a lot of stereotypes and discrimination because of her accent and ability to speak English clearly. And she didn't want us to go through that.
Right.
So it's a disappointment, but I also understand. What's nice is that she does talk to my children in Japanese.
Yeah.
But they know a little bit more than I do.
Right. No, but it is true, because the world has changed tremendously. I know, actually, because I live in Louisiana for a very long time, for 18 years in all actuality. And you're right, but now the world has become a cosmopolitan world. And everything is acceptable and not necessarily acceptable. People want to know. And so you have this global camaraderie, so to speak.
Right.
So it's quite interesting, and I'm really glad that she is speaking, you know, to the grandchildren in Japanese.
Yeah.
In some ways, that's good. So now that brings me up to the point here. So obviously you are a great sushi chef.
No. I'm a sushi lover, but not a good sushi chef.
Come on now. But, you know, I mean, I love sushi, too, so that's why I brought it up, and
yeah.
I read something about, you know, you know the real thing compared to, say, the Americanized sushi.
Yeah.
Let's walk down memory lane. I know that you came a long way, I understand this because I grew up in Asia,
uh-huh.
and understand about the fact of being very strict and so forth, very structured in some ways.
Yeah.
But let's walk down memory lane and talk about the indecisions that you were facing in college, but perhaps maybe prior to that, while you were still in high school, and what's like, you know, being in a structured family. Of course, your dad was obviously in the military, too, so that didn't help.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of structure, not only because of my, you know, the Asian background, but also
mm-hmm.
my dad's military background.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that we should mention, the other half of me is African American. So
mm-hmm.
my dad
yes,
is,
yes.
and my mom is Japanese. And so growing up, there were a lot of lessons learned growing up biracial in the, you know, the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that my father also instilled in me was he always wanted me to be better.
Mm-hmm.
And always to do more than anybody else. And I remember going to college and wondering, because I went to college at the age of 17, right out of high
mm-hmm.
school.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's such a young age, even 18 or 19, to try to figure out what you want to do for the rest of your life, you know, picking a major. And my dad had a background in accounting, had an MBA in accounting.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Michelle, you should
mm-hmm.
go into accounting.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I did.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Within a few months, I realized I was miserable, and accounting bored me to tears, and the thought of going to another class was
mm-hmm.
awful.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to my dad, who is who I always went to when I had a question about what to do in my life, and I said, what do I do? And he said, well, why don't you try a hard science like biochemistry? And so I went and I tried biochemistry, didn't enjoy that. I tried microbiology. And every time I went to my father, it's kind of a double-edged sword. He always
mm-hmm.
gave me great advice, but the other thing that was always kind of underlying it all, he always wanted me to be the first African-American woman to do blank.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was always this pressure to perform and to excel
mm-hmm.
and be better than everybody else so that I could
right.
be the first in my, I don't know,
mm-hmm.
my field or my ethnicity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's why he was always pushing me towards accounting, towards hard sciences.
Right.
And really what my love was and has always been since junior high was writing.
Right.
And, you know, I went through college. I had five or six different majors
mm-hmm.
until I finally settled on my degree in English.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I fell in love. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I love that major, and I love what I do now as a writer, and
mm-hmm.
I'm glad that it's taken me a long time, but I've finally gotten there.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any siblings growing
I do.
Up?
I have an older sister. She's
mm-hmm.
only about a year and a half older than me,
mm-hmm.
and I also have a younger brother who's about 10 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, now, I mean, how growing up, I mean, you know, obviously, and you said that, you know, you tend to, which is interesting because it's sort of a classic thing where the daughter does gravitate towards the dad and the son gravitates towards the mom. And so I'm just wondering, how's your relationship with your mom from that perspective? Do you talk to her about those serious things in life?
You know, it's interesting because my dad was the one growing up that was the strongest voice in our family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And oddly, he was the one, and this might also be a cultural thing in terms of my mom coming from Japan, but
mm-hmm.
he was also the one that talked to us about our girl stuff, like starting our periods and things
right.
like that. My mom never had those kind of conversations with us.
Wow. Okay.
I actually didn't get really close to my mom until after high school and into college.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting because
my mom. Growing up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, how is the relationship now, though?
Oh, it's amazing. I talk to her probably every other day.
Right, right. Okay.
About tons of things.
So it's sort of a coming to full circle then, you know. So it was just it's just kind of interesting because I remember when my situation was because mom was at home and dad was working, obviously, the breadwinner of the family. And
right.
I talk about this in my book, you know, about mom is the chief operating officer of the Tan family, you know, the
right.
Tan company. And so everything goes around her and she just keep my dad informed, and I used to tell a friend of mine, and you know, like, hey, if there's something that I need to talk, something personal, you know, mom would be the first one that I'll be talking to. And but it was just kind of, you know, silly how things, you know, you start gravitating, you know, around. And of course, my dad died a year after I came here to the United States. So that sort of somehow didn't give me a chance to develop that, you know, that relationship, so to speak.
Right.
And but anyway, so you were on this journey of personal self-discovery when you were in college and changing from accounting to those what I could say as applied sciences. I mean, that's a big change. And then, of course, all of a sudden right now you go off in a tangent doing English.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, that was quite interesting. So were there any particular role models at that time that you were, you know, that you were gravitating towards to? And if there is, you know, why?
You know, it's interesting. At the time, I didn't have any specific role models except for, I mean, I was, and maybe in some ways still am, a classic daddy's girl.
Mm-hmm.
So my, you know, my dad was a lot of, was a lot of my focus, and he was a lot of, in terms of, he did a lot of role modeling for me.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in college, it took me, I almost am embarrassed to tell people this, especially now that I teach college courses too. I don't want my students to know this, but it took me 6 years to get out of undergraduate school.
Mm-hmm.
And primarily it was because I had so many different majors, and I was always pursuing things I didn't enjoy under the guidance of my father.
Yeah.
And I felt obligated to do so because, you know, he was paying for my college education, which is a blessing, and I'm appreciative of it.
Right.
His promise and commitment was to pay for 4 years. After the fourth year, he stopped paying. I went and got a full-time job to help support myself and finish off college. But that was a blessing, too, because that at that moment, I just felt like I was released. And now that I was paying for college, I could make my own decision. And that's when I decided to shift to English and do what I loved. I didn't have any specific mentors that helped me in that decision. I do remember that when I was a preteen, my dad had handed me a book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, that he handed to me when I was about 14. I was like, thanks, Dad, not interested, and kind of chuckled. But then when I was in college, and, you know, at that time, too, this is kind of a little piece of the history, my parents had gone back to Japan to live with my little brother.
Wow.
For a period of about 3 to 4 years while I was in college. So there was a lot of freedom. I no longer had my dad physically in my presence, and I didn't have to be tied to the money of him paying for my college. And I gravitated toward Covey's book, The 7 Habits, and I started flipping through it and rereading it. So maybe in some ways Covey has been my mentor, because that's when I decided I'm going to pursue something that's meaningful for me.
Right.
And that's when I, you know, switched my major over to English.
Right.
Yeah.
No, but it's true. I read his book, too, and it makes a big difference, and that sort of changed my life, too, in some ways putting me in the right direction as far as writing a personal mission statement and developing a vision of what I want to do for the future.
Exactly.
And so it was a very powerful book, and I think in many ways, I mean, it touched so many lives, even to this day. So I agree with that. But I have this thing about over the years that I tell people, you know, life is a buffet line. And you go down the line and you taste the different foods. In this case, you know, you taste all the different majors, and you have to check it out and find out what is your true calling, what you like. And many times, and I tell people, and even to this day, even in my previous careers and whatnot, when I'm involved with a lot of people, I tell them, in your life, you're going to have many careers. Career is something that that you do because you, when you put a passion into what you're doing that you like, that becomes a career. And so it's a little bit different. And then not only that, career is a hobby that you do and you get paid for it.
Right.
Whereas a job, it is something that you do, you know, to pay bills. So these are something that it comes from inside out. It's a personal inside transformation that you go through, you know, and finding out what, you know, it's like. Let's talk about your first career after college, to getting married and becoming a mother. And what was that like, that transition?
Well, let's see. It's interesting because I went and got my English degree thinking I was going to be a writer and had all this personal empowerment thinking I'm going to show my dad. And then promptly went to him afterwards and said, what do I do? And he said, well, the only thing you can do is become an English teacher. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, I don't really want to do that. Now, during the last several years of my college experience, I had worked at credit unions, mm-hmm. and I worked my way up through all the different areas of that and was a loan officer, actually. Mm-hmm. And I ended up getting hired right out of college with a technology company, a software company, that mm-hmm. developed all the back-end programming that we used at the credit unions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that ended up being my first job out of college, as being a technical trainer. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people think it's interesting that I went through this whole journey, got an English degree, and then became a technical trainer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I did that for about a year and a half, because that job had me traveling about 90% of the time around the country. And mm-hmm. I basically lived at client sites for between 6 weeks to 3 months, mm-hmm. implementing the software and training their staff on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an awesome experience, because I got to see the country at the expense of, you know, my company that I worked for,
mm-hmm.
And gained a lot of experience. So that was my
right.
first job out of college.
Mm-hmm.
And then my training career just kind of blossomed from there. I went from there to an accounting software firm and taught accounting software
mm-hmm.
for the company. And it's interesting that I gravitated back to accounting, because it was something that I really didn't like. And I think I was still trying to please my father at that point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's a good thing that I went there, because that's where I met my husband,
mm-hmm.
at the accounting firm. And we got engaged, and
mm-hmm.
I ended up taking another job working in human resources, doing training and development for a .com.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of how my career path has evolved, and that's where I was until I decided to leave corporate employment in 2003 to start my own business.
Mm-hmm. I see. So you did mention just now that your husband is an accountant?
No, he was actually in sales.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking about, you know, oh my gosh, your dad's an accountant, and
yeah.
now your your husband is an accountant. No, I'm just kidding.
No.
So with all these right here, and then of course you became a mother, you know, shortly thereafter. And what sort of mothering skills did you tap into shaping yours, basically?
Good question. You know, it's interesting, because I was kind of following a path, you know, that everyone has a little master plan their parents teach them growing up, and mine
mm-hmm.
was go to college, get a good job, find a good man, get married, buy
mm-hmm,
a house,
mm-hmm.
have a kid, you know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
all
mm-hmm.
that. And
mm-hmm.
I actually got to all that fairly young, at about 26. I had everything, you know, a six-figure income, a brand
mm-hmm.
new home, with a white picket fence,
mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
I mean, an SUV. I had all that, and I woke up miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, and I, at that time, I just had one child, so I just had my daughter. And I remember waking up one morning, and I was pregnant with my second one. And I remember thinking, is this really what it's all about? I have
mm-hmm.
all this great material success and external success, but I'm not totally happy. And I remember reflecting back on my mom and thinking about what she was like. And I remember growing up, she didn't always seem
mm-hmm.
happy. And I didn't know what it was really about, but
mm-hmm.
once I became a mom, what it became about for me was I wanted to have more meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted, now that I had this child, I wanted to do something beyond just provide a material experience for her,
mm-hmm.
but to provide a meaningful life for her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what influenced me to start the Integrated Mother and kind of change my focus and the things that I did in terms of my work, just so it had more purpose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so is that how you developed that Integrated Mother came about? Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, the business that I started right after leaving the corporate world was an HR consulting business, and I did consulting, training, and for different corporations in Los Angeles. At that time, I was living in Los Angeles. And about 2 years into that business, what I had realized was that I had recreated my corporate life from home.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd taken everything I learned from the corporate world, created this business, but it was all based on everything that I'd already done, and it still wasn't genuinely me. And
mm-hmm.
I looked at my client base, and I looked at who I was serving. And what I realized that was a large majority of them were women in leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing was that I most enjoyed working with the women.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I had male clients and I coached men and all that, but I really enjoyed working with the women who were struggling with the work-life balance issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because usually what I noticed was that they may have issues with their leadership or challenges managing a team in the workplace,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of that was rooted in an imbalance between work and family.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's an overlap between the two, and you bring work home, and you bring home to work, and vice versa.
Right.
And so that's what kind of started the integrated mother. And I was also looking at my own journey. And on my website, I think I described this a little bit, if you dig a little bit deeper into the About page on my blog. But I talk about a period during where I went through a period of depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember waking up, because I was taught growing up that you always had to achieve more and do more and be more. And what that instilled in me was, yes, a drive to be successful, but deep inside what it instilled was a feeling of I'm not enough. I need to constantly be doing more. And back in 2005-ish, I fell into a depression over it because I felt like, gosh, I'm working so hard in my business. I'm trying to raise, at this time, 2 children, and I was actually pregnant with my third. And I was just like, what in the world am I doing? And I remember there was a point, let me backtrack a little bit, and this must have been when I was just had my 2, that I blacked out in the kitchen. I remember one evening in the middle of the night and hit my head on the counter.
Oh, wow.
And I crashed into a pole. I mean, there were signs that were happening to me that I was ignoring, that I was kind of spiraling down because I was too busy trying to be ambitious and keep up the appearance that I could do it all, have a career, raise a family, have a great husband, have all these fabulous things. And eventually I remember breaking down in the car with one of my friends, and she looked at me and she said, Michelle, when are you going to get the help that you need? And I remember her saying that, and I was like, oh, my gosh. And but that really wasn't the catalyst. What really was the catalyst was my then 3-year-old daughter running around frantic in the house, and she pulls me on the back of my pants, and she says, Mommy. And I'm like, what? And I turn around, and she says, why are you always so angry?
And those words,
it blew me away. I almost buckled and fell down, and I realized at that moment that, you know, in all my drive to create this perfect life, I was not really doing it for my kids.
Right, right.
And that's when I started talking about it with other moms and friends and realizing that I wasn't alone in it, because you do feel alone in it when you're kind of swirling around. And that's one of the catalysts of starting the Integrated Mother, to serve women and to help them see that, yes, we can have ambition, and it's important because, those dreams help us have focus and purpose. But we also need to balance it and realize that part of our purpose and focus is raising our family and living the best life that we can.
No, it's very true. I believe one thing for sure, when I was running a corporation in my other careers that I have had, one of the things that I teach people is that you cannot bring order at work home, but you can always bring order at home to work, because what happens is that when you show up happy, then it just permeates into your organization.
Right.
And but you can't, because work is technically is never sort of like happy. It is structured. It's supposed to be happy. It's supposed to be fun, but it's not really in a way. And so what happens is that work is structured. So when you come home and you're trying to bring this structured, the sort of a regimented way of doing things, that doesn't work. However, with that sort of a carefree, fun-loving fluidity of energy of love at home, you can bring it to work. It's in you. It's within you. People can see the glow in you.
Right.
And that's what gives you the strength and your team the strength. And so I agree with what you were talking about in terms of, there are a lot of people having that sort of, oh my gosh, what's going on here? And I'm trying to be all for all and everything else, and I can't do it. And then, of course, the other side of the equation also is that we're not living in the present moment, like you're talking about, your daughter coming up and saying, you're always hangry because you're on this mission of, if only after I get through this, or maybe that, next week, next month, next year, and everything else, and we fail to see what's important, which is here now.
Exactly.
So that makes a big difference. I know you mentioned about your depression, and you actually virtually had a little blackout there, but what are some of the hardships that you were going through in terms of making a mental transition from working in the corporate world to working at home? Because that was, I know, a big jolt, so to speak, because, you know, from a standpoint of making six figures, and then being in that sort of camaraderie of every day having that sort of environment, and then now, guess what, if you're not disciplined, things doesn't get done. So tell us a little bit about that transition, the mental transition.
Well, the interesting thing is, growing up and all the success that I had in the corporate world, I really felt I was doing all of it by myself, because in a lot of ways, I was. It was just me. You know, and then it was my husband, and but what I learned in that transition was, and let me back up a little bit, because when I made the transition, when I left the corporate workplace, I was 9 months pregnant with my second daughter when I told my boss I wanted to quit. I was also in the middle of a master's degree program at the time. And I remember my boss looking at me and saying, "Are you crazy?" Literally like that, because she said, "You're pregnant, you're in the middle of a master's degree program, and you want to go start an HR consulting business?" And she instilled some of her doubt, you know, in that conversation with me, but I was firm, because I was, at the time, too, I was teaching the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People in the workplace, and every time I taught it, it was just affirmation that I was living against my personal mission, and I told her that. I said, well, you know, partly it's because of I want to do what I've been talking about in these classes I've been teaching for you, and so my initial move away from the corporate life was actually fairly blessed, because they really liked me, and actually gave me, she tried to keep me and said, we were just going to give you another promotion and a raise. And I said, well, I'm still leaving. And she says, well, we really want to help you then. So she actually annualized out what my raise would have been into a flat bonus. And they paid for my maternity leave. I mean, it was like this nice little package. To walk away. And I immediately got some big-name clients, because I was working for this .com and had some really good connections. And so the first 6 months of my business, oh, my gosh, the transition was easy. I said, oh, I made the most perfect decision in my life. 6 months into it, all of my contracts started to fade. And what I realized was that I didn't have a business owner mindset, and I hadn't been doing what every business owner should be doing more than 50% of the time in their business, which is sales and marketing. And I woke up 6 months later and realized I had no business. And that's when the hardship of the transition really set in, and I realized I have no income, I have no prospects. I was depressed. And I was really, really stressed out. And part of it was, I mean, not only did I lose things materially, it was a shedding of things materially, but it was also a shedding of a persona. Because suddenly I had to learn how to live on far less than what I was accustomed to in a long, long time. So that transition was really hard. And it was hard for me also to tell people that I was a, quote, work-at-home mom. Because there was this perception in my head coming from the corporate world that corporate women, that working mothers that worked in the corporate world worked harder than women that worked from home or who were stay-at-home moms. So I almost had this, I'm not going to say almost, I'll just admit it. I did have this feeling of being better than other moms because of what I was doing as a corporate employee. And that was a really tough transition, and something that it's taken me a while, I still work on it, to let go of, this whole idea that I'm corporate. You know, I don't just work from home with my kids alongside me, you know. But I do, and the truth is that I do.
No, it's true. I mean, what you said is, I've met a lot of people that go through that transition, and especially there is an underlying current about out there that that sort of underappreciate mom staying home. But but the fact that, you know, you make the transition, that speaks volume. And on the other hand, also in life, as I've talked to many people, and in one of my shows, I recall in May when I was talking about why we celebrate Mother's Day. And one of the topics we talked about was celebrating and acknowledging the forgotten moms, the real Mr. Mom. And this is not because of, you know, divorce and the kids have to live with the dad a few days a week and stuff like that. These are actual situations where the couple made a decision, somebody's going to have to stay at home, and home family values comes first. And in the course of doing that, what happens is that we all agree there's certain things in our family life we cannot outsource.
Yes. Yeah.
And that is the difference. However, we do live in a closed system. You cannot create order without creating disorder somewhere else. So it becomes a family decision. And so having you made that decision, you know, it's a big decision, and I understand the stigma of, especially, you know, you had mentioned, I think, somewhere when I read about you where you were a type A personality, but in all actuality, and I agree with that, because a lot of type A personality, in all actuality, within us ourselves, we are very insecure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we did today is good, but tomorrow will be better.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
If we step backwards one day, oh my God, you know, it seems like the whole world noticed this, but when we step forward, like I have to buy an ad in the New York Times to let everybody know we did that, you know.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a self-inflicted anxiety.
It is.
And no question about it. But at the same time, I guess in your case, you know, I read somewhere here that something that helped you was what a tree taught me about motherhood.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was working from home,
mm-hmm.
still back in California, and I was talking to my coach. I had a business coach,
mm-hmm.
and we were just doing some visioning and coaches. You know, we all like to use metaphors and things.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
she had asked me something about if you could compare yourself to something, what would you be?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, and I'm looking outside in my backyard. I had such a beautiful backyard then. And I was like, oh, I'd be that tree that's in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it for a while, and it just developed into this whole vision. And the reason I picked the tree was because the tree to me represented life,
mm-hmm.
And what it was like to be a mother. I mean, a tree, it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It gives shelter. It gives food to certain life. It gives protection, something that I wouldn't do as a mom. So that's the above life. But below life, there is this complex root system that no one sees. And what I learned about trees and what I know about them is that a tree can look beautiful on the outside, but their internal root system could be dying, and then all of a sudden the tree will just die.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
I
true.
Realized that, yeah, as a that happens to us as moms, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing that. I was living this beautiful existence on the outside, so my tree was gorgeous. But on the inside, my roots were decayed and dying, and I was dying on the inside. And so that's kind of where that article came from, or that idea of
mm-hmm.
what a tree taught me about motherhood. And I realized I had to work on my internal root system
mm-hmm.
so that I could be a stronger tree or a mom for my kids and my family.
That's fascinating, because I think a lot of people don't realize that they tend to look at things externally and not internal. And you're right, because, you know, we and by nature, even guys are like this. You know, we're very external. What we see is what we get and what we appreciate. But we don't realize what actually generates the external beauty is the internal beauty itself.
Yeah, and I don't fault my parents for this, but this is just
mm-hmm.
how I was raised. I was raised to believe.
Sure.
These are things you need to achieve. And now that I'm a mom, I want to teach my kids, yes, you should shoot for those things. I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
great to have things.
Right.
At the same time, I want you to grow up to be amazing people
right.
that are generous, that are giving, that are genuine. And that all comes from that, you know, internal root system that people don't
right.
always see, but they can sense or kind of know intuitively about you when they meet you.
Right.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I in all fairness, and this is where, based on my personal experience, what happens is that you'd be surprised that their root system, our parents' root system, because the fact that, you know, I think you and I are about, you know, in the same generation here, and growing up where they grew up, like you say, your dad was in the military and your mom is obviously, you know, is Asian from Japan. And my parents grew up during the war, right after the war.
Right.
And what happens is that their survival instinct, their root system in all actuality is very, very strong. You know how when we are good at something, we take it for granted?
Yes, yeah.
So we presume that our kids have it.
Mm.
Everyone we know have it. And so what we're teaching is what we're lacking.
Right.
So what we're saying, you know, listen, this is what you need to accomplish. If only I had the time, if only I have your youth, if I only have this, if I only have that. So, but in all actuality, they fail to reinforce in saying that because you have this foundation, that's when you can accomplish that, because it's the left hand and right hand, the balance, so to speak. And so with us, in our situation was, oh my gosh, you know, it's just this. And we're still very raw from inside, the root system.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I hope that kind of hopefully shed some light here, because what happens is that we're in a situation that then we realize that, oh my gosh, you know, it's external. But believe me, during their time, when they have nothing external, everything is internal.
That's true. It's a generational thing. I mean, it's something we talk
Precisely.
About human resources all the time. It's
Precisely.
The firmer perspective versus the Gen X versus Gen Y, the millennials.
Right.
So, and I think that, you know, culturally now we're shifting, especially, I mean, I saw a turn with 9/11, but the our focus kind of shifted a little bit, or actually a lot then, from, you know, having all the external to a life of meaning.
Right.
We all saw in that moment that things, in an instant, life changed. And I've experienced it too. I mean, I remember when we first moved to Phoenix for a great job that my husband took. A year later, and this was, you know, Phoenix was a lot less expensive for us to live in compared to Southern California. I was able to scale back my work and kind of be a more of a stay-at-home mom versus just a work-at-home mom. And I was starting to enjoy that transition, that new transition too. And then all of a sudden, my husband came home and said, I lost my job.
Oh, wow.
He got laid off. I mean, this company paid for us to move here, and less than a year later, they laid him off, and we had no family here, and we were just stuck. And I just, what I'm learning through life, and then is that it's a constant shedding process for me, because what I formerly hold so important, the material stuff, every single year, a little bit's being shaved off.
Right.
And the more that's shaved off, the you would think that I would be more miserable, but the happier I actually become. And I actually feel more rich now than I did when I actually had the financial richness.
Right.
And that's not to say I'm living in poverty.
No, no, I
understand
that.
I've learned to live well without having to, you know, push all this money into it.
Right.
Which is exciting for me, because I never knew how to live like that before.
Well, what happens, you know, this is the second generation, so to speak, because the first generation is heavy and very strong rooted. That's our family, our, you know, our parents. And we're the second generation in the sense that we understand, we finally sort of understood that, I like your tree analogy, where you're shedding the dead weight, so to speak, because for new growth. But at the same time, subconsciously on the inside, internal, no one realized that our roots are digging in deeper and deeper to Mother Earth, because, you know, it's strengthening us.
Right.
And then the challenge will always be, and in all actuality, history has shown itself, the third generation technically was squandered, because if the second generation does not prepare the third generation correctly, by the third, if not the fourth, everything will be lost, because then the children will grow up with no challenges.
Right.
And so that's the interesting part about coming back to full circle and living a balanced life. Last week, I have a certified financial planner and a personal financial coach talk about it. And her case is very, very unique, because her personal life, where she had two children who are both married, 29 and 30, but somewhere along the line prior to in the 20s, she had a child who is 6 years old right now. And, of course, you know, having all the material things and everything else, do you give everything to junior here? you know, obviously growing up is different for this kid.
Yeah.
And they were mindful enough to know that, you know, I can't do that. Because it changes the dynamics. You know, what sort of sense of appreciation does he have about things?
Yes, so it kind of affirms or confirms that there's that in motherhood and raising our children, there's a balance in everything.
Precisely.
In our focus, in our time, in what we decide to give our children. Because that causes a lot of stress sometimes for me, too. You know, your child begs you for something, you want to give it to them. But I also know that they also need to hear no every now and then, as much as they hear yes.
And the difficult time comes when it's not that when you cannot afford it, because affordability took care of that, but it's when you can afford it, and then you have to make a decision that you know is a good decision.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah, and that's a tougher, the tougher decision to make, actually. Mm-hmm. So, coming to helping other mothers, how you know, do you help mothers with your integrated mother website? Tell us a little bit about that. How can you help them?
Well, you know, when I was in California with the integrated mother, mostly what I did was I did lunch and learns, workshops within corporations to do trainings and coaching one-on-one and with groups within the corporation. When we moved to Arizona, I decided I wanted to scale back my work life a little bit because I was missing out on some really important parts of my children's upbringing. And so I transitioned the business over to more of just an online web resource where moms can come for resources, advice, and community to share, learn, and grow as working moms. Eventually, and this has always been my dream, I mentioned it earlier, is to write a book, and I'm constantly working on the manuscript. Hopefully by the middle of next year it'll be ready, and I'll be out there shopping for agents and publishers and whatnot. But until then, I'll continue to build the website and work with moms there.
Okay. Tell us about your website address and your blogs.
The website address is www.integratedmother.com. I also have my freelance writing website, which is www.michellewithonedorch.com.
Now you have some interesting people that you interviewed for your website too. So you know, the resources that you say you mentioned for your, you know, from being able to get it out to mothers and so forth. What are some of the things that mothers have shared with you with regards to this?
You know, there's so many lessons that I've learned from my own experience and also from other moms. But I think the most important thing and the underlying theme in all of it is that we all need to be kind to ourselves as moms. We're not perfect. We strive to be, but I know that we all do our best every day, and that sometimes our best is, or actually, let me, how should I frame this? We have to define what that perfection, that quote perfection is in our own terms. I've learned that moms, gosh, we just people in general come in all different shapes, varieties, and forms, and our visions, our dreams, our goals are all different. We all share a common bond as moms. But how we approach motherhood can be vastly different. And what I've learned personally is that one way isn't always the way, that there are many ways to do it, and that we should just appreciate that what we're doing and trust that what we're doing is the best that we can do.
That's what you've learned from these various moms. What are the things that you share with them in terms of from your perspective in your, I guess, your forum and your conversation with them?
Yeah, I think it kind of goes along those lines, too, is that to pursue your version of what work-life balance means, I actually don't really like the word balance, which is one of the reasons I called it the integrated mother as opposed to the balanced mom or the balanced mother, because I see with integration that you're merging your career desires with your family desires, with your personal desires and dreams, and they can work as a unified whole, as opposed to what a lot of us moms do or try to do, which is compartmentalize. This is me at work. This is me at home.
Right.
This is me with my church friends. This is me with my mom school friends. And we have all these different personalities that we take around, which is stressful because you can't just be one integrated person through all of it. So really what I try to teach through my website and the resources I offer is how moms can be better integrated and just be a whole single person in all those different roles as opposed to compartmentalizing themselves and then trying to balance all those different compartments in their life.
So basically you're teaching fluidity, the ability to slide back and forth because let the situation dictates of the moment dictates what, you know, hat you need to put on basically.
Exactly. And well, one of the good examples is work. For me, yes, I was raised to believe that I had to work in the corporate world. In fact, I remember last summer I went to visit my dad on the East Coast with my kids. And, you know, my aunts and uncles were all there, and they all gathered around the table at a dinner that they put on for us. And they were asking what I was doing. And I told them, I'm doing the integrated mother, I'm doing writing. And I remember now this is, they're in D.C., so they all work for the government.
Right.
And all of them said, you should get a real job, Michelle, government, and that's how you should support your family.
Right.
And it just, like, pulled me back, and what I realized then was that I can't integrate myself into work that I don't love. We talked about this earlier when you said job and career. And I think part of being an integrated mother is finding work that you love, not what people think you should be doing.
Right.
And, yeah, sometimes that might mean you take a back step in your career or what's perceived as a back step to other people, but really is a forward leap for you. But these are all things that you do on your path to become more integrated, because I couldn't become an integrated mother when I was in a job that I didn't love.
Right. Well, you're looking at it also, which is good, because you're looking at it as an opinion, not something as a fact, because you inside of you, you realize that you're capable of doing all this, and they just don't understand. They're looking from a different perspective, and you know, we are conditioned by the environment.
Right.
They grew up in a situation where everything is structured, everything is the way it is, and for in your case, you have the opportunity, your life has been the buffet line ever since you, whether you realize it or not, since college, tasting all the different things that you've encountered, and then you finally selected on something that you like, and then you enhance it a little bit more educationally. You certainly have gone out there and did your postgraduate studies and everything else, and being certified in so many different fields. And now you realize that your life's journey is coming to a point where, okay, I've got all this knowledge and I want to share it.
Right.
Yeah. And that's a unique scenario. And no one knows your life's plan better than you do.
Right.
One of the things that my mom told me a long time ago is each life's plan has its own path. Each path leads to its own perfection in its own way. And nothing is wrong with anyone. It's just, this is your path.
Right.
Had someone asked me, you're going to write a book? Are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
You know? It's like, you got to be crazy here. You know, I'm not going to be doing this, but it just happens. You know, I'm very interested in reading your book when it comes out next year. It took, I was just driven and driven to write a book, and finally I sat down, and I was spiritually driven, and I finished it in 7 months.
Yeah, awesome.
So it was just kind of a unique situation. And besides that, also, my 91-year-old foster mom in Missouri finally called me up in January of 2007 and said that, you know, when are you going to finish this book? I hope before I die.
Yeah.
And I said, yes, Carol, I will definitely do it, you know. And so I did plan myself, and I started writing in April 2007 and finished it in December 2007. But it's always exciting to talk to someone that, you know, that has something to share, something wonderful. And in your case, you have this so much wealth of information from experience. And that's what it's all about, speaking from inside out. Can you give us the number one advice that you would give to mothers who are contemplating to do what you did, that is leaving the corporate world and be a work-at-home mom?
Yes, I think that the most important thing, and this is actually true for a mom who's making a transition in any part of their life,
mm-hmm.
is to build a support network. I mentioned this earlier. I was trying to do everything on my own because I had done so much on what I felt like on my own before, and I was unwilling to accept help from people.
Mm-hmm.
And what that created for me was a lot of stress, because there was so much burden and pressure to do it
mm-hmm.
myself. But what I learned is that you have to build a support network, and it starts with yourself, finding ways to enrich and support yourself spiritually, physically, mentally, emotionally, all those different ways. It also starts with reaching out and talking to other moms and telling them your story. I think that we bond over our stories, and
mm-hmm.
I remember I'm part of Mothers of Preschoolers at my church, MOPS,
mm-hmm.
and I remember welcoming all the new moms into the one of the meetings recently, and I said, my question is, how are you? And everyone walked in and said, fine. And I thought, that's really interesting, because I'm not fine. It's a really rough morning. What happened? And I just started telling them, you know, what my morning was like and how grateful I was to be able to come to MOPS and drop my kids off in childcare and enjoy time with them. And when I admitted that, they all just opened up and said, you know what, I'm not really that fine either. But we do that. We don't want to – the way that I build my network is by being honest in my communication
right.
with others. And, yes, I'm going to tell you when I'm not happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you when I'm ecstatic and overjoyed. And, you know, my kids see this too. So I also have a support network in them. And it's not that I rely emotionally on them.
Mm-hmm.
But – I am honest in, you know, I remember one day my daughter came in, I was crying on my bed because I was just having a rough day. And she said, and she just rubbed my back and she said, Mom, it's okay. I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that she did because she knew, she's seen me when I was upset, when I'm
mm-hmm.
happy, when I'm sad, because I don't hide the, quote, bad emotions from her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So just to get back on track, I just think it's important that we build a support network, both professionally and personally, so that we have people to call upon
mm-hmm.
when we need help and then to ask them for help.
Right. Well, we're all interconnected, and the ability to be able to share, and like you say, that's being honest and being open, that makes a big difference because then it's a true you. Because we all tend to be conditioned, like you were saying, you know, how are you doing? Great. Because if you don't say great, then, oh, my God, it's like a customer returning something. You know, they just bought something and they're leaving, and you say, oh, I hope everything's great. Oh, wonderful. What if you say no, and then you're stuck, and you can't answer the question, and that's not real. So, yeah, you're living in a different world. Having to do it all over again, looking back, and obviously now you've made a tremendous transition and you're certainly a different person. When I say a different person, not necessarily from a core value standpoint of view, because we're always the same when we continually, as we continually refine ourselves, so to speak. But having the opportunity to look at everything, you know, hindsight, so to speak, what would you have done different and why?
I think that I value almost every experience that I've had in my
mm-hmm.
life, good and bad. But I think that the thing that I probably change is that I probably wouldn't have held back on my dream for so long.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be 37 this year, and while that does not make me a very old person,
mm-hmm.
I just feel like if I had started and pursued my dream of writing earlier and not let the external conditioning
mm-hmm.
grab such a firm hold on me,
mm-hmm.
I could have been enjoying my career so much more. At the
mm-hmm.
same time, I'm kind of a believer in this kind of, I don't want to call it cosmic, but how things kind of work together
right.
and to create a life path for you.
Right.
And I feel like if I didn't do the things that I did in my life, I might not have met my husband, had my kids, you know, all
right.
those things. So I'm appreciative of everything that I've done, but I wish I would have pursued my real passion a little bit sooner.
You'd be surprised on everything in its own time.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Your writing would not be as effective as it been if you would have got it out, say, even 5 years ago, believe it or not.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
So that's the difference, and it's just something that I have learned over the years in the sense that, people ask me, you know, what do I want, you know, if I have to do it all over again. I say, well, for one thing, learn all the different languages so that when I go travel,
right.
I can communicate effectively, and that would not change my life, so to speak, because
right.
it's we are some total of the cumulative things that we, you know, we did before, and your book would be more powerful and more effective and more personable, and it's you having it, you know, done now versus, you know, back then or something.
Yeah.
And you're right, because had you taken a different path, you may have not met your husband or this husband, so to speak.
Right.
And you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's life, you know. And so those are the different things that you're looking at. Let's talk about your personal goal. I know I read about the fact that you like running marathons, half marathons, that
half,
is.
Yeah.
So let's talk. Hey, just the fact that it's a half marathon, it just makes me weak in the knees, I'm telling you. I mean, I love sports, I love everything else, but I hate running. So,
yeah.
But talk to me about that and the upcoming Disneyland Marathon.
Oh, okay. Well, the running thing is, you know, when I was going through my depression, it was so bad that I was actually on two forms of medication and talk therapy, seeing a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got pregnant with my third, I got off those medications because I was pregnant, and I realized that I needed something different. I needed a different kind of medication to help keep me mentally healthy. So I went back to running, which was something that I did before kids and that I loved. And I started doing it again in 2006-ish, roughly, maybe 2007, mm-hmm. when my dad, who's a half marathon runner, challenged mm-hmm. me to do a half marathon here in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And it was perfect timing because I was able to drop about 25 pounds in the last year and a half.
Wow.
And really improve my running. I went from running a 13-minute mile to now I do about a 9.5-minute mile.
I don't think I can bike that fast, you know. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So I right now I'm in the middle of training for the Disneyland half marathon over the Labor Day weekend in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I do half marathons, I always look for half marathons that are fun,
mm-hmm.
that have a good medal or some type mm-hmm. of swag bag at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the destination ones where I can go somewhere.
Right.
So it's going to be fun to be able to go back home to California
mm-hmm.
and run at Disneyland and spend the week there with my family.
That's great. I mean, this has got nothing to do with perhaps watching the movie Forrest Gump or anything like that, right?
No.
I'm just kidding.
You know, it is my alone time because I wake up
right.
really early.
Right.
I go running about 5:30 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and that's my 30 minutes to an hour when I get time to just be by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a lot of times I run with my run partner, but that's also, you know, mom mm-hmm. bonding time for me with my
right.
kids. But it's just a nice break from all the action of a really busy life.
Well, that's great. That's wonderful to hear that. And good luck to you in the Disneyland Marathon. I mean, that sounds very exciting. Well, Michelle, we're coming close to the end of the show. And as for all guests for this show, do you have a recipe for living that you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
I do. You know, the thing that I've learned and the recipe I have for everyone is to be willing and never quit. And let me tell you a little bit more about that. I
mm-hmm.
think that a lot of us have dreams, and we always talk about the things that we want, but we're not always as willing to do the things that it takes to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to be willing to, I don't want to call them sacrifices necessarily because I don't see them as sacrifices if you're going towards a dream or a goal that you want.
Mm-hmm.
But you may have to do things that are uncomfortable. Like for me, it was, you know, working a little bit less and earning less and letting go
mm-hmm.
of some of the material stuff that I valued so much. And the never quit part just means that there's going to be a lot of obstacles that pop up. It's a part of life. It
mm-hmm.
makes life interesting. Otherwise, life would be way too boring.
Right.
But just to never quit and to always get up in the morning and try again. And
mm-hmm.
if, you know, you have a series of, quote, failures, which I really see as opportunities, maybe you have to deviate your path and do a little course correction. But don't stop pursuing
mm-hmm.
your dream.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. I mean, I like that very much. I mean, that's a beautiful recipe. That reminded me, I just wanted to share this with you, which is interesting because I have this in my book. My sister sent this to me about a couple of years ago for Chinese New Year well wishes. And I think you know, what we have talked about, and this is my first time ever sharing this with a guest. To me, you know, this is what you are all about. Health makes all things possible. Wealth makes all things work. Love makes all things beautiful. And, of course, in my situation, it says, may you have all three, and I believe you do.
Oh, thank you.
And so it was quite interesting. But, you know, the conversation that we've had, I think this is just tremendous. I really appreciate you, you know, sharing all these things with us this morning. I mean, it's just wonderful. Thank you for spending this hour with us. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us this morning. Please join me next Tuesday morning to close out our month-long series on Women Empowerment, Mompreneurs. My guests will be Tracy Beyer and Christine Stevens, the owner of The Grateful Chicks. We'll be talking about the interesting business of reminding all women and mothers that there is always something to be grateful for every day of our lives. For additional information, please check from mymamaskitchentalkradio.com, johnnytan.com, from mymamaskitchen.com, and you also can follow me on Twitter at Twitter.com/FMMK Talk Radio. And thank you for listening this morning and have a great week. Michelle, thank you so much and have a great day.
You're welcome. Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.